Hi, everyone. Welcome to the NBA podcast. My name is Morten Jensen. I'm joined by Jason Pat. And Jason, today we are actually going to live comment the NBA Draft Lottery 2018. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm hoping the Bulls can get a little luck here tonight, although I'm not really expecting for it. But other than that, lottery is always a fun time to see where everyone's gonna end up for this 2018 NBA draft. So I'm excited.
Yeah, a little Derrick Rose lottery luck 10 years ago might be some symbolism.
Yeah, let's hope so. I guess let's hope that whoever gets drafted, if the Bulls actually won the number one pick, has working knees 5 years into their career. Oh, yeah.
I can't help but think, because this is also hosted on Bloggable right now, so we could just talk about the Bulls briefly and then move on to like the entire draft lottery. But it seems to be if the Bulls win like a top three pick, I could just imagine Garpax coming out and going, oh, this was the plan all along. But that's not really telling the whole story.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this year they were a little bit better than expected. They ended up in the number six slot. They got lucky already once, kind of, with their little tiebreaker with the Kings. Obviously hoping for a little bit more luck. This past Bulls season was very bizarre on many levels. A lot of people thought they'd be the worst team in the league, and then they were a little better than expected after starting 3-20. The whole Nico Portis thing. So, I mean, I guess the Garpax has been bailed out once before. We talked about the Derrick Rose thing. If the Bulls did not win that lottery, I think I looked back, and I think like DJ, I think they were in the ninth slot. I think like DJ Augustine was in that pick. Hilarious that DJ Augustine ended up coming to the Bulls at one point anyways. But, I mean, just imagine if the Bulls did not win that lottery. Even though the Rose thing did not turn out well, ultimately, like, I mean, he obviously saved them for a bit, and they had a few really great seasons. So, I mean, and if they won it again, maybe it saves them. I mean, even if they don't get lucky, and they're still going to be in a really good spot at number six or number seven, hopefully something crazy doesn't happen and they get even further back than that. But either way, the Bulls are still in a decent spot, even though the year wasn't quite what people were thinking was going to happen. But we'll just see how this turns out tonight.
I only do one simulation on one of those web pages that simulates the draft. And I did one here today on Tankathon. And that one draft lottery, the Bulls went down three places to number nine. God. The lowest.
Let's pass on that.
Well, then let's talk about something else that's equally dumb or weird. The Brooklyn Nets pick remains totally unprotected. That deal, I still can't wrap my head around how bad a deal that is. And it still amuses me to this day that Bill Simmons, when that deal happened, was like, oh, this is not good for the Celtics. Like, what?
I did not realize that when I saw recently his old tweet come up that said that it was like a terrible deal. It's like, well, yeah. I honestly did not remember exactly my takes or other takes on that when it happened. But clearly it has played a huge role in the Celtics' ability to rebuild. We're seeing what they're doing in the playoffs right now with the guys. Basically, they got from those picks with Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. Basically, they have because of, I know they obviously made a trade with the Sixers as well, but that pick was basically thanks to them. And now that pick is going to the Cavs now. It was the Kyrie Irving deal. Just like that trade is just the gift that keeps on giving for the Celtics. And I guess we'll see if the Cavs now will get lucky again, because we've seen them in the last few years get lucky in the lottery. And I think they got a Dan Gilbert's kid is there, Nick. He's there again. I think he's got this. I think he's won it twice there when he's been there, and I think they won it one other time then as well. So if the Cavs win it again, that'd be. I mean, I feel like there's. I know a lot of people always love to talk about NBA draft conspiracies, which I don't really buy into because the way they go about it these days.
The frozen envelope.
Yeah, the way they go about it these days is like. It's almost like impossible to rig it, but like there's like if the Bulls won with it being in Chicago. I'm sure people will talk about rigging it if the Cavs won again, or if like the Knicks jumped up from number nine, like there'll be people crying about rigging, which is hilarious because it's just kind of funny. But we'll see.
Oh yeah, like whoever wins, there'll be some angle for someone on Twitter going, "Oh, this was rigged." Whoever, like even if it's Sacramento, like it would be the excuse of, "Oh, let's help poor Sacramento with the bad ownership and everything." Like there would always be an angle to play. But yeah, I mean, and just to give a heads up to people, like we will be live commentating. And unfortunately, because I'm in Denmark, the whole feed process for me is like 90 seconds delayed. So, Jason, you'll actually be doing the play-by-play, so to speak.
Indeed, I did. So, that'll be fun.
Yeah, get your Neil Funk on.
Oh, God. Well, if I get my Neil Funk on, that means I could probably be getting like the teams and numbers wrong. sorry, Neil. Actually, somebody worse than Neil these days is Marv Albert. Aside, like, Marv has just been...
Oh, yeah.
It's been brutal, these playoffs lately. It's sad to see because Marv is an announcing legend. But, man, I think he called Kevin Durant Andre Iguodala yesterday or the other way around. It was one of those two. It was just like, dude, come on.
Yeah. No, Marv is getting older. He's still a boss, and he's a legend, and I'll always respect like what he did. But at this point in his
time to hang him up.
It's time to just seek out that retirement home, Marv.
It is.
Yeah. No, it's unfortunate, but so you know, before it tips off the whole thing here, how are you enjoying the playoffs?
Well, the Celtics thing is very interesting. We mentioned that before. I've the last few years I've been one of those who's like to chide Celtics fans and make jokes about Danny Ainge and all that. Now that's just throwing right back in my face because like everything has worked out great for him. And I mean, the thing is though, like most of these guys on the Celtics are super likable. Like I like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum seems pretty awesome, and Terry Rozier and having all this fun with like the Drew Bledsoe and smoking Eric Bledsoe in that first series and all that goofiness. I think the only one I really don't like is Marcus Smart, just a pain in the butt, and I think he's overrated, even though he fits well with what the Celtics do. So, I mean, that whole story has been really interesting. Horford playing well has been good to see. He's always been underrated by a lot of people, and he's had struggles in the playoffs in the past against, like, Tristan Thompson. We'll see if it looks like Tristan Thompson will probably start Game 2 tonight. But besides, I guess, that whole Celtics thing, I mean, the Cavs have been kind of fascinating. It was disappointing to see the Raptors get their ass just handed to them by the Cavs. And then, I guess, over in the West, like, I mean, there's just the Warriors. We saw Game 1 last night. The Rockets got out hot, and then the Warriors just kind of reeled them in. And just ultimately, it was just like, it almost feels like the Warriors are inevitable thing. So I guess we'll see. I hope the Rockets can bounce back. I hope we get a competitive series. I would assume the Cavs are going to bounce back tonight, but the Celtics still haven't lost at home in the playoffs, which is pretty crazy. So they've been wild. So I'm just hoping for some nice long conference finals because the second round was kind of a dud after a fun first round. So I'm hoping these conference finals are a little better.
Yeah, me too. I really enjoyed the respective game ones here in the conference finals. They've been extremely entertaining. And I think we kind of needed, I think this season, like the regular season, was a bit of a disappointment with that many injuries going on to major players, key players. So I've really enjoyed like the bounce back in the playoffs. And you're going to let me know when the lottery starts, by the way, because you're the one with the television.
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, the coverage is starting now, but I'm pretty sure they won't actually do anything until for a while. I think this goes for like an hour. Like it's crazy. I think they'll be yammering and talking to all these guys there. They're probably, I'm assuming they're doing the actual selection in the back room right now, I would guess. And then let's see who we got. We got Jay Billis, Woj, and then Mark Jones. Looks like the three main guys. I think they're bringing in probably like they'll probably have stuff with like the Draft Express guys, I think, as well. I would hope. So, yeah. But they're going to need to figure out a way to fill up all this time, and we're going to have to do that as well as we wait here for. And then they're just talking about the best available players now. So I guess let's transition into some talk about the actual players at the top of this draft.
Right.
So I guess we could start with the Bulls since we are talking about this unbloggable. If the Bulls do get lucky and got the number one pick, who would you take number one? And I guess just in general, who's your number one prospect? I guess either way, even if Bulls or no Bulls.
Man, I mean, I'm flip-flopping between Doncic and
Ainge. I am as well. I said that to somebody on Twitter like just now. Like, I'm a coward. I can't make a decision. Like, I feel like it's got to be one of those two guys probably, but I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. I feel the top three is locked. It's some combination of Doncic and Aiden going one and two, and then Jaren Jackson Jr. at three. Like, he's the clear third. So you have those two levels, and then after three, it's just a level down. And it might be anywhere from 4 to 12 where people can, or guys can just be drafted either way. But I'm just so unsure about the number one. I love Luka Doncic. I've followed him a lot recently. Not just recently, honestly, but being over here where I'm at, I mean, you just get more exposure to him, and he's fantastic, like the best player in Europe, and not like the best young player in Europe, like the best player, and he's 19. It's insane, and I speak to so many Euro guys about this all the time, and they're just in awe. And at some point, you just have to separate like his impact and his athleticism, like how will he transition to the NBA? And the athleticism, or lack thereof, is the big concern for me. I'm just so worried about how he might turn out to be, like, at peak, that his athleticism is similar to, like, a 32-year-old Paul Pierce. That's a major concern.
Yeah, that seems like concern for everybody. I know I've seen him have some pretty sweet dunks and stuff. Not that that really means anything. He's like 6'8", 6'9". But that does seem to be the concern with him. And like defensively, like will he hold up with like lateral movement? And will he be able to get his shot off the dribble and do the kind of creation that we see him? Because we talk about the good stuff with Doncic. His passing, his vision. I haven't watched like a ton of him, but I've watched a few games of him. And his passing is obviously, and like just creation and his all that stuff is what really stands out. It's incredible. It's so advanced for a player of his age against that kind of competition is just incredible. And just his general numbers, again, at that age, at that time of competition, that's basically the second best league in the world. And it's like unprecedented numbers, which is really impressive. But a lot of people do worry about that athleticism. I just saw Jay Billis had put up his top five available players, and he has Doncic fourth. He has Bagley second. And then Jaren Jackson Jr. third. I can't remember who he had fifth there. But yeah, that was his top four. He had Ayton, Bagley, Jaren Jackson, Doncic as his top four. So
wow. Now that's sleeping on Doncic. Like at worst he's second because the passing ability, he's a great rebounder. He can push the ball. Like there are so many upsides to him. He can get his own shot. I mean, he can pull up from the dribble after like long screens, and like he's got NBA range. People look at his 3-point percentage right now and go, oh, it's only like 31. That's because he's fatigued as hell. He's played I think 140 games over the past 20 months, and at that young of an age, I mean, and that responsibility he's carrying Real Madrid at right now, it's like that's just a case of him being a little bit overburdened. So I'm not worried about the jump shot or him creating his own thing. It's like it's all about the defense, and I shouldn't say like the defense in terms of him playing hard. Like I have no question about him playing hard on defense. Like he'll play hard. It's just the physical.
Right. Just yeah. Exactly. Like I said, can he guard? I mean, he's basically. I guess sometimes you could hide guys occasionally, but there's versatility is such a name in the game, especially defensively. We see with the Warriors and Rockets and all the switching. Like you can hide guys for a while, but then teams will hunt out switches. Can he stay with faster guards? Can he stay with big, strong guys? Like, see, that will be a question mark. He's still so young. Once he gets in an NBA weight program, hopefully puts on a little more weight. Hopefully, the athleticism works out. I don't know. We'll see. That definitely will be a question mark. Talk about defense, though. We look at DeAndre Ayton, which is when it seems like one of the big question marks with him. He is a freak. He is a physical freak, just dominant presence, like just a complete monster of a man. But I was concerned a little bit watching him defensively. I'm not sure if it was just a college thing, if it's something that coaching could help. Just it seems like his instincts aren't quite there. I think he blocked less than like two shots a game at Arizona this year, which for a guy with his physical stature and profile, like he should be blocking. We saw, like, I think Mo Bamba and Jaren Jackson are blocking like four or five shots a game, and I feel like Ayton, I'm curious to see what the reason was behind that, if that's something that's going to transfer over. Like, I mean, will he be like a Karl Anthony Towns? Karl Anthony Towns is a great player, but he does have those defensive limitations. Will he always have that? Or is it something that will come, I guess, with time and that he'll learn and get better at? Because, like I said, watching some Arizona games this year, I was a little concerned about that. How do you feel about Ayton and, I guess, just his long-term upside and some of the downside there?
Well, I think the physical upside is tremendous. Like, he's 7'1", and with a 7'5 wingspan, and he's supremely athletic. So the ceiling there is
tantalizing,
outstanding, completely. But, I mean, watching him letting 5'11 guys go into the paint and finish layups over him, not exactly encouraging. I will say this, though. As the year progressed, I felt he got better. Like, it seemed like he was realizing, oh, I'm actually 7'1", and I have long arms, and I'm athletic. I can use this to my advantage. And then sometimes he'd relapse into this, oh, I don't know if I can get there at this point in time to block that shot, so I'm not even going to bother rotating. And I think in NBA terms, like, he'll have coaches who just go, yeah, you better get your ass over there. Like, you better rotate. Don't give up on the play, otherwise you're on the bench. So I think he needs the right environment as well to really flourish in the NBA. I think that's crucial for him to end up someplace where it's, like, a very positive surroundings. In terms of his, like, where he can fall through, like, as you said, defensively, I mean, the lack of shot blocking is really the big one. I know the shot blocking is just a stat. You don't really need to be a good defender just to rack up a bunch of blocks. Like, just look at DeAndre Jordan, who is vastly overrated on the defense, honestly. But it's just, like, I don't think he's going to be even a remotely decent shot blocker in the NBA. I think he's going to be, like, less than one per game. And that, when that happens, like, you have a Cleveland Cavaliers situation where you know you can just attack the defense and go into the rim.
Yeah, right. Because, like I said, blocking shots isn't always a, whatever, indicator of ever right. being a great defender. But in college, with, like I mentioned, a guy that is that big and, like, that mm-hmm. athletic, like, you would think his block rates would be better than they were, and they just weren't. So you do, like, that's, I wondered, is it an effort thing? Is it just the instincts just aren't quite there defensively? Because I remember one specific play I watched earlier this year where it's like I feel like he was on, like, the other side of the rim and just, like, didn't even, like, and there was a guy driving from the weak side, and there was just, like, no effort to get over and really even contest or block. And I just, like, that's, I mean, obviously that's cherry picking a play. It wasn't always that bad, but it's just a minor concern to have. So it'll definitely be something to watch for as a guy, especially a guy we talk about. In the NBA these days, with all the switching, and when we see big guys who can't defend, if they can't hold their own, sometimes they get run off the floor, and especially if they're not holding their own on the offensive end. Like, he's obviously got a lot of talent offensively. He could probably hold his own, but, I mean, you see what a guy – not that he's going to be Jahlil Okafor, but Jahlil Okafor was a stud in college, put up huge numbers at Duke, won a national title, comes in the NBA and he gets run off. He can't play because he just can't defend, and he's slow-footed. His reactions are bad. Like, because I'm not saying DeAndre Ayton's going to be that. I would assume he's going to be much, much better at that. But even I mentioned Towns as well. Towns has had his defensive problems. He's an incredible offensive player, incredible rebounder. But the Wolves can't really take the next step until their defense gets a lot better, and a lot of that is Towns in the middle. So it'll be interesting to see how Ayton does get used to the NBA game and playing NBA defense as a rim protector in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, I feel you kind of have to pair him with a strong defensive unit. Like, if he's not going to be a plus defender, then you just can't pair him with, like, two or three guys in the starting lineup who are also negative defenders. Like, then you would need an environment where you can sort of cover for his lack of rim protection and defensive coverage in totality. I still feel there's a certain level of hope in me that he can turn it around just because of that physical strength, and maybe because he will have an NBA coaching staff that goes, yeah, just recognize your size, man. Just recognize it for a second and really make him understand just how big he is. Because, I mean, he's physically imposing, even for NBA players, like going up against a guy who's 7'1 with a 7'5 wingspan.
Giant man. Who has, giant human.
And who... Right, and he probably is going to list out as having a vertical leap of 40 inches. That wouldn't even surprise me. So, I mean, to that extent, like, NBA teams would look at him and go, oh, we need to plan for this guy, and he needs to be ready for that challenge. But, you know, speaking of big men, I want to go back to Marvin Bagley. Like, if you just mentioned Jay Billis had Bagley second
overall in his best available.
That's, I mean, I get the hype around Bagley to an extent, but I feel like... In regards to big men, I have him third behind Ayton and Jaren Jackson. I think there are also some defensive concerns there. He doesn't have the longest wingspan. He seems to be more of like a score rebounder, much like Ayton, but not with the similar, you know, athleticism or potential.
Yeah, he too has the defensive concerns as well. Duke was not good defensively. They had to switch to a zone defense, which is crazy when they had Bagley, Wendell Carter Jr., and other good NBA type players. To have to go to a zone defense, I feel like it's a kind of a, it's a, it's not good when you have that kind of talent and you have to play a zone defense, because their man-to-man defense is getting torched. Because Bagley was such a productive college player. I mean, he put up incredible numbers. He dominated. He's clearly very skilled. I guess you do worry about if what kind of perimeter game he might have in the NBA was how much of his scoring was just him overpowering smaller defenders in college. I mean, I still think he'll be pretty good, like a really good player. But like, yeah, I mean, when you compare it to Jaren Jackson Jr., I was a big fan of Jaren Jackson Jr. this year. He was kind of a weird deal with Michigan State because Izzo was weird with his minutes. He did also, one of his biggest problems was foul trouble, committed a lot of dumb fouls. He's still learning how to play defense. Like I said, Izzo was crazy with his, silly with his minutes. And the game that Michigan State got upset in the tournament was just like obnoxiously ridiculous with Jaren Jackson Jr.'s minutes. But like, I mean, he's kind of ideally, like his idealized skill set is like awesome for this NBA. Like, whatever, he's 6'11", 7 foot with long arms. Like I said, he blocked, like, his block rates were incredible. His defensive impact when he was able to stay on the floor was incredible. He shot something like around 40%. His shot's a little funky, the form itself, but
yeah.
I mean, he made a good percentage of them. His free throw percentage was pretty solid. I know he had some problems finishing against length, but he is super young. And just like the skill set there is super tantalizing. And if he figures things out, like a stretch big man who can also protect the rim like crazy, like that sounds super awesome.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of people throw around the Tyrese Thomas, Dromile Swift comparisons because they're kind of scared of where he'll go. But I just point to his age.
Yeah.
And I point to the fact that he can actually shoot the three ball, unlike Swift or Thomas. And while the release was indeed funky, I mean, you can look at the three throw rate or the three throw percentage as a means of, is it sustainable? I think it is. I will say it's a problem that he cannot convert in traffic against length. But in today's NBA, you have to wonder, like, as long as he can run the floor and can finish lobs and he can shoot the three, maybe you don't need him to really attack the basket all that aggressively in a half-court setting. Like, that, you can have your wings or your guards really do that, and then he can clean it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if, like, if they're going to have Lowry as a guy who will probably develop a more an off-the-dribble game attacking the basket. Like, obviously, you want your center to be able to finish a decent percentage around the rim and be a rim runner and get lobs from Chris Dunn or Zach LaVine or whatever point guard or guards they may have. But yeah, I was definitely a big fan of his watching Michigan State this year when he did play. So I would probably take him over Bagley as well. Like you said, I think you mentioned that Ayton Doncic probably top two. I think I probably would also go with JJJ as third, and I feel like I would even, part of me, there was a very small part of me that would consider him number one, but I would be a little too scared to make that pick. I just like his talent level that much, but I don't think I think there'd be a too big of a bust potential there as a number one guy over with Ayton or Doncic on the board.
Oh yeah, it would take some serious balls to take him.
Yeah, you'd have to really.
I mean, I would respect it, and it's certainly not going to be like an Anthony Bennett situation, which also admittedly took balls. It was maybe not a place where you should use your balls, but yeah. In terms of when you look at Jaren Jackson Jr. as well, I saw the Stepien guys say that he's basically Joakim Noah with a three-pointer. If that's the case, I don't feel the ball handling is there.
He did do some decent stuff from what I remember playmaking-wise, at least passing. He showed some of it, but I mean, Noah developed an incredible passer. Solid ball handler skills wise, like that might be a bit of a reach, but I mean, in terms of just like the defensive impact, maybe hopefully a good rebounder, and then plus a not a ugly ass tornado jumper. I don't know, that that does sound great.
Yeah, but I mean, just the upside of that being like a potential defensive year, defensive player of the year candidate, while also shooting the three. That would be huge, especially for a big. And it's just, I think it's just the unicorn attraction here. Having a big who can rebound, who can shoot, who can block shots and switch on defense. Like it doesn't get more unicorn-y, really. And I think that's a part of the attraction. And speaking of that, like looking at the rest of the bigs in this draft, when you go down the list, you don't really see a whole lot not taking the three. Like the closest you come, I think, is, I have to go to a mock draft here. I think it's Robert Williams, right? Bamba
took
three.
A decent, like not a high, super high volume, but he has a decent stroke. Like I don't know if he'll ever be like launching threes like liberally in the NBA, but he seems to at least have a decent workable stroke that if a team works with him, that he could at least be a a threat out there, which is sometimes all you really need. If you can space the floor and be a threat, and not, we see in these playoffs, especially when guys aren't a threat to space the floor and they can't shoot, opposing defenses just leave them alone, and that leaves just poor or scrunched up spacing, and it screws up an entire offense. So if you can just be a workable threat from deep, that's obviously really helpful.
And with Bamba, he actually lowered his release point here after the Texas season ended. Like there's a video flooring over, you know, Twitter and whatnot, with him having a lowered release point and I think making 9 threes in a row. Not that like he's doing it in an open gym. I mean, that's like Yan Yang going up against a chair. It means nothing. But again, like you saw that release point having lowered, so he's conscious about the fact, oh, I need to change my shot in order to be more effective. I think that goes a long way. I think back in the day, team or players were more stubborn, I think, in terms of, oh, I feel my shot is this, so I'm not going to tweak it because I'm comfortable shooting it this way. But now players are more open-minded, thinking, oh, I need to be more effective. I can do stuff if I can do more stuff if I change my shot here and I do this and this and that. That will lead to a whole bunch of different benefits that I can utilize. So it's going to be interesting. Where do you have Bamba?
Where do I have him?
Do you have him?
I don't really have myself, like my own personal whatever big board ever. I mean, I don't know. Like, he's very intriguing. His defense, his wingspan is, what, 7'9"? He's basically got a Rudy Gobert wingspan.
7'9 and a half, I think.
It's something absolutely insane. It looks like, I think Jay Billis had him fifth, because he's looking at 6-10 right now, and I can't imagine he would be outside the top 10. And that sounds about right. Just like as a potential defensive stopper, guy you could anchor your defense with. I did read one article. I think it was at the Stepien, I think, that had some concerns about his defense, which was actually really interesting to see kind of a counterpoint. Like, yeah, like he blocked all these shots and looked like a dominant defender in college, but he had these, I can't remember what the exact problems were, but he did have some downsides defensively, not even just the offense. He does have a workable jumper, but he still didn't do that much offensively. It seems like he's limited. Right. But there were some questions about his defense as well. So I feel like he seems like another kind of boom or bust guy, but if he does work out, even if he's not that good offensively and he is great defensively, if he's like a Rudy Gobert type, maybe a lazy comparison just because they both have the super long arms just in similar height. But like, if you can get that guy that can anchor a defense, even if maybe you look at like a Clint Capella type, like we have to see how like effective Capella is as a rim protector and as a guy that can rim run. As long as you do some things offensively, and then if you can be that stud rim protector, I mean, and if Bamba can turn into that, I mean, he's definitely worthy of a pretty high pick.
Would you take him at 6 if we go back to the Bulls?
Man. I guess it might depend on who else is there.
Right.
I feel like it would depend on who else is there. Like, I guess let's go to the Bulls, and like, I guess if the Bulls stay at 6, let's say the Bulls stay at 6, I guess who would be your, I guess, realistic pick or your ideal pick there?
Yeah, assuming
the top of the draft goes like we as expected, which would probably, like I said, Ayton, Doncic, Jackson are probably gone, and then maybe you get some talk like Bagley, Bamba, Trey Young, Michael Porter Jr. all like possibilities to go there or maybe fall back to the Bulls. Like out of that second tier or third tier after Jackson, who's your favorite?
I mean, I'm in love basically with Wendell Carter.
I saw you tweeting about that recently.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm crazy about this guy. I feel there are some weaknesses to his game, in particular, like the lack of defense. Lack of athleticism. Forgive me, it's almost 2 a.m., so I will screw up with the language once in a while. But he's just so solid in every area. It's just the fact that he can't really move all that well laterally, and that's just a concern in today's NBA. But he can shoot the three ball, he can get to the line, he rebounds at a fantastic rate. He's a good, solid defender who also blocks shots. He's not like an empty numbers guy. He can score around the basket. He also has post-ups, which, I mean, we just saw Al Horford the other night just maneuver the Cavs team by using post-ups. So it does come with certain advantages. Like, you would rather have a guy who can play in the post who instead of someone who can't, right, even though you won't utilize it as much. He has a mid-range game, and he's a hell of a passer. if for him to go to Chicago, I could see him play center because he's listed at 6'10", but he has a 7'3 wingspan. So I don't really care about the raw height, honestly. Like him playing center next to Laurie, I think that would work pretty well. They would have some pretty interesting high-low combinations. Both could step out and hit the three. Obviously, Laurie would be much more high volume than right. Carter would, but just having that guy out there who you would have to guard, who isn't like Robin Lopez. And oh, to Lopez's credit, like he started shooting threes a little bit, but yeah. But yeah, I mean, having two bigs who can come out and stretch, I think that would open the court up, and like that would give Zach LaVine a chance to come in and average 25, honestly.
Yeah, I won't say like I'm some expert on all these guys. Like I watched a decent amount of Duke games, and Carter was definitely solid. What do you think about his upside? Do you think he'd be he seems like a solid, like solid high floor guy. What do you think about, like, do you see him blossoming into like a really like the high impact, potential high impact guy that like the Bulls fans were hoping for out of this draft when they decided to trade Jimmy Butler? Or do you think he'd just be more of a safer pick, or like is there anybody else you think that would be more of a home run option? Like, because I've been going back and forth about that. If they do say it's six, like, because I feel like a guy like, I don't know, I keep coming like thinking about it, like Michael Porter Jr. could be like a home run pick, but he had the back injury and didn't play much in Missouri because of that, and there's questions about him. Like, he seems like, because coming in, Michael Porter Jr. was a potential top number one pick before he had the back injury, and then that all just kind of went by the wayside. Like, but Jay Billis, I think, has him at number 9 on his board. And I know some people just aren't high on him at all, but then you wonder, is it just because we didn't see him? Or, like, what are the real questions there about Michael Porter Jr.? What do you think about taking, like, I guess, what do you think about Wendell Carter Jr.'s, like, potential as, like, a legitimate big-time impact, like, future All-Star versus, I guess, talk about Michael, what are your thoughts on Michael Porter Jr.?
Well, first, in regards to Wendell Carter, I think he could have a similar career arc as Luol Deng, like making a couple of All-Star games and be a high-caliber starter for 10 years, if not more. I think he's just one of those guys who's rock solid. So you could call it a safe pick. I mean, I think the floor for him is incredibly high. He's not going to fail. Yeah. The question is, like, how much more is he going to give you? Like, outside of the certain things that he's going to provide, like defense, some shot making, and rebounding, is he going to add that extra layer like an Al Horford does with elite passing and elite three-point shooting and all these things? You just don't know yet. If he does attach those things to his game, I think he could be a lot better than having a Luol Deng type of career. Having said that, he's not a home run pick. And you just touched on, like, Michael Porter, I have not seen as much of Porter as for example, Stephen Ngo from The Athletic. I've seen a couple high school games, and I saw all of his 53 minutes, I think it was, for Missouri. And so I don't really know. I love the athleticism that I've seen in highlight videos, honestly, and which I saw in like the two high school games. And just raw athleticism does mean potential to a certain extent, but he has a jump shot as well. And he can sort of handle the ball. The handles could be tighter, but again, what, 19 years old? Every 19-year-old's handle could be tighter. So he is a home run pick if you believe that back injuries, or if the back injuries aren't as big of a concern. But let's be honest for a second. Back injuries in the NBA, those are tricky. Like ankle and back, those are not great injuries, and he has one of them. And I think it's hard because when you look at the wings available, I know Pax specifically talked about wings and available wings at six. I mean, I guess if you're forced to, you take Mikal Bridges.
I mean, we talk about safe picks. I feel like Mikal Bridges would be like the ultimate like Bulls safe pick.
It's
3-and-D guy, good size. He can really shoot it. Like, and he's a guy who will fit like anywhere. He would slot right in at the three for the Bulls and probably be a really nice player for like a really long time, but he's another guy.
But do you tank for a Mikal Bridges?
Probably not. Like, I would feel if the Bulls, when it was looking like the Bulls were going to be at like 8 or 9, I guess they still could be if they get really unlucky tonight. But when there was that stretch where it looked like there was going to be like 8 or 9, like I was kind of resigning myself to Mikal Bridges. Not that he's totally, totally bad, but again, like safe pick, not high upside pick. The Bulls going into this year and their fans thought that they were going to be getting another future, like legit bona fide stud to add to their group. I don't think he'd ever be that. And the other wing, I guess what other wings? I mean, there's the other Miles Bridges. That'd be way too high for him. I think he'll probably be, he's like a borderline top 10 guy from Michigan State. And then the other wings would be,
Zaire Smith.
Oh yeah. It was just tweeting about one of the draft guys. I saw tweeting today about Zaire Smith. I think he had him as like a top 8 or 9 prospect. I honestly have not watched that much of him. I feel like the hype around him is growing. Just incredible athlete. Because he went to Texas Tech, right?
Right.
And I think Ricky, our friend Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation, I think he was talking him up a lot. But I mean, taking him, I mean, would you take him at 6? I don't know enough about him to say I'd be comfortable taking at 6. Maybe if once I dived into it a little more, maybe I would. But he seems like a really intriguing prospect. Just that seems kind of high for him. And besides that, the other wings, I don't think did anybody else really take that high. So then I guess if you're looking elsewhere, I mean, would you, for the Bulls, I guess, starting with the Bulls, I mean, would do any of the point guards, does Trae Young, Colin Sexton, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander excite you at all? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think Trae Young is getting crapped on a lot. And I think the Jimmer Fredette comparisons are lazy and dumb and also woefully inaccurate, because then you look at Young, who had these stats in his freshman season, and then you compare it to Fredette, who had similar numbers, actually worse numbers, in his, junior or senior season. Like, you can't compare that. That's comparing apples to oranges. I don't think that's fair at all. So I do expect Trae Young to come into the NBA and produce. I think we have so many questions regarding his defense as well. It seems like this draft class primarily is an offensive-minded class, with the exception, especially, of Jaren Jackson Jr. and Zaire Smith. But otherwise, like, mostly it's offensive-minded players. But Young, I mean, he had such a big responsibility
at Oklahoma. Insane load.
Right. Like, can you imagine him being asked to also play hard-nosed defense on every possession when being asked to put up 30 and 10? I mean, I feel it's fair to say, like, we don't know about his defense. People who come out and say, oh, he's a bad defender. No, we actually don't know, because he had to take possessions off so he could be, like, the 30 and 10 guy.
I think it is fair to say that his physical profile is, you worry about the defense. Fair. I thought someone just actually texted me, said that he gained a bunch of muscle in the last couple months, which is obviously huge. And like,
oh, nice.
He was like, I mean, I guess, I don't, the Steph Curry comparison is crazy. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he's not going to be Steph, but like, we've seen Steph. Steph's gotten a lot stronger. And while Steph, I think he's a bit of an underrated defender. I mean, we saw in the last night, we saw the Rockets going after Steph time and time again, and while there were times where he had struggled against Harden, he has gotten better defensively, and he fights really hard, and he plays hard, and he's kind of crafty as well with steals and all that stuff. So, I mean, so I guess you're hoping, not even to go on the offensive in terms of comparison with Trae Young and Steph, but if Trae can add that kind of muscle, and if he plays hard defensively, maybe he can be at least passable and not a complete train wreck. I know some people were worried about him being a complete train wreck. Again, I have not watched enough film of his defense to say for sure one way or the other and have like a complete hot take on that. But I guess you do hope once he gets to the NBA, once the load's a little longer, once he gets a bit stronger, learns a bit more about defense, you hope that he can at least be a bit more passable, like in the vein of Steph.
Yeah, maybe he actually should be brought into the category of potential home runs. I mean, when you look at Trae Young, if you imagine him maximizing his potential, like, that's a home run.
Yeah, absolutely. That is definitely true. And, yeah, because if he, even, like, again, bringing up Steph, like, while becoming what Steph is now is complete outlier, ridiculous stuff, like, even if he's, whatever, like, 60 to 70% of Steph or something like that, like, that's awesome. Yeah. That's terrific. That's probably
top like an five point guard in the East.
That's probably an all-star. That's like a really good player.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, I Trae Young does intrigue me, not just for the Bulls, but just in general, because I really am interested to see how he does in the league. I feel like in terms of looking at the draft where he could go, I don't think he would go top 4. I mean, I guess someone gets really crazy. Thinking maybe, because I think I guess it could depend on how this plays out. And I think as it's looking right now, I feel like possibly the Magic at five. Because yeah. they badly need a point guard. They were tweeting about tweeting about Shelvin Mack leading the team with assists by the end of the year with like 3.9. Like they badly need a point guard. So I feel like that seems like a natural spot. If he gets to the Bulls, I mean, I wouldn't hate it if they took him. I would have questions about him and Zach LaVine combination and how the Bills build a competent defense with these guys I know Chris Dunn's a really good defender, but then I guess you also wonder, how are you doing the Chris Dunn, Trey Young, Zach LaVine thing? I'm not totally sure how that would work out, but I don't think either of those got Trey or Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine aren't good enough players to say if they really love Trey Young, the Bulls really love Trey Young, that they would definitely pass on him. At least in my opinion, maybe they're high enough on Dunn. I mean, they've loved Dunn for a while. Maybe they would pass on him, but I'm not sure.
I think they're bound to take a wing. But it's also interesting because when we look at teams with multiple picks, especially if, and we can use the Bulls as an example against because they have the number 22 pick, I think there are still guys where you can swing for the fences with number 22. Like, I don't think you should go with stability at 22. There you just go for highest upside, whatever. Yeah, whatever position. I mean, you don't even consider anything. You look at age, you look at the athleticism, and you look at, you know, mentality, and that you go from there.
Yeah, I agree. And just to interject here, they are finally starting to announce the guys here. So all the guys are sitting on the dais, and we are getting this rolling. So hopefully we should have these initial results here in the next few minutes here. So let's see what we got. We got, I like the Elton Brand choice for the Sixers. They got Elton Brand and the Celtics president sitting next to each other, of course. That's kind of funny. Who else we got up here? You know, Mitch Kupchak is back in the game with the Hornets. Hornets now. The Bulls, I believe, have Michael Reinsdorf, Jerry Reinsdorf's son.
Oh, that's inspiring. Yeah. That's so inspiring.
Totally. I saw him. I think he was wearing some sweet, like, black and red sparkly shoes. So that's super fun.
Yeah.
We got one Twitter question here. The Bulls do get lucky and get in the top. This is from Robert Lemke at Robert Lemke 21. If the Bulls get a top three pick and take a big, do you think they can get another first rounder for Brook Lopez, Robin Lopez? I would automatically assume not. I don't think his value is that high. I think he'll be an expiring next season, I believe.
Next season.
It's like $14 million on his contract. I mean, Robin is such a nice player, funny dude, does sweet videos, wears funny shirts, but I mean, I don't think his value is that high in this NBA, so I would probably say no to that. You could probably get a second rounder for him, but I would probably say they probably cannot trade him for a first. I would still think about trading him. I know they like his professionalism, they like him as a mentor to these young guys, but I mean, I guess if they do take a big, and they do have a bunch of other bigs, they have Lowry, they have Felicio, they have Bobby Portis, and they do take a big. I mean, it would make some sense, but they still might want to have Robin out just to mentor some of their young bigs. So, I don't know.
I agree with that. I mean, I think theoretically his value is a late first. I think he's good enough to warrant that, but no team is going to give that up because of the cost control asset that a draft pick is. It's essentially giving up a 4-year cost controlled asset for 1 year of Robin Lopez at $14 million. Oh, 2 years.
Yeah.
No. Wait a second. No, 1 year.
I think he's going to be expiring next season.
With 14. Yeah. So 1 year, but you're actually just getting a 1 year rental and giving up a 4 year cost control asset for that.
Right. For a professional center. Like it's, I don't, that's not worth it. It's not worth it.
It's not. So
no. Okay, yeah, I agree with that. Let's see, right now looks like they're talking to Nick Gilbert. I'm not sure about what. I don't have the sound on, but they're asking him some questions and he's talking, and I don't know. It is kind of funny. They are making the like I mentioned, the Sixers and the Celtics guy, like, basically it looks like they might be sitting at like the same table, which I guess naturally, but.
Well, that does make sense, even though it's going to be super awkward.
Yeah. Okay. So as they continue to go through these guys outside of the Bulls, as we're like Bulls guys, who Don't count them. Who would you like to see get the number one pick?
I mean, there's a part of me that would love to see Memphis get back on track. But then again, I would also love to see Phoenix getting number one and choose Ayton, because that would be a fun team. I mean, they have so many possibilities to actually be pretty damn good in 3 or 4 years' time. And yeah, Dallas, just for having a Dirk Doncic combo as well for 1 year.
Ooh, yeah, that'd be fun. I feel like if the Suns obviously have the best odds, it seems like they would naturally take Ayton as whatever the hometown kid or whatever. And I don't know what to think about the Suns at all. Like, and
they probably go Doncic, honestly.
That's right. They just hired the freaking, I totally blanked on that. They just hired the Slovenia
Igor Kokoschkov.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to say his name. I totally went over head because I was thinking the longest time. Yeah, if the Suns get the number one pick, they'll take Ayton because they went to Arizona. Blah blah blah. But they just signed the Slovenia head coach, so of course they're taking Doncic for the number one. Unless it's just a complete smokescreen, but that would seem pretty crazy.
Could you imagine if they get number one, they take Doncic, and then they flip Booker for two?
Oh God!
And take Ayton.
Oh, there you go. that would be insane.
I don't think it's gonna happen at all. But I mean, you could start a conversation with teams if you include Booker. I think he's close to untradeable, but they would pick up the phone.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Booker's an interesting player. His numbers, his raw production is incredible. Like, I'm not sure how much of it is like looter and a riot type, but his actual numbers are just like, for his age, I think he's still like 21, 22. So like his numbers for his age are incredible. His defense isn't very good. The Suns as a whole, like the Suns have so much just raw talent on their team. I'm just not really sure how it fits together and how they're going to get better defensively. I think they had the worst offense and defense in the league this year, which I think they were the first team to do that since like the Bobcats team that, whatever, went like 7-59. That's really hard to have. Because obviously there's a lot of bad teams, but they had the worst offensive and worst defensive rating, which is they got a ton of work to do, even though they have all this talent. I remember you wrote something recently about
the chat should not be named.
Yeah, and you were talking about you don't want them to do anything stupid. You want to just be patient. But I'm pretty sure that they've been talking about how they want to go with some win now moves this summer.
Ryan McDonough said that they would only choose like two players, more or less. Like they would only keep two players,
players. They have like a ton of assets, and they have all these young guys. So I'm curious to see how they screw it up again. But
like the Marquise Chris trade, that was horrendous.
Oh yeah, that was really bad. All right. Now they're going through all the odds. They're showing the balls. Come on, let's get this card.
It's a real ESPN production.
We've been talking right now for 45 minutes or whatever, and we're still waiting for an actual results here. Now they're showing the media. We're getting a Zach Lowe look here as the guys go into the back room. They got to turn their cell phones in and all that fun stuff. We're just waiting.
It's a waiting game. Yeah, you know what? You were right, because I was like, we should get on this thing a little bit earlier. You're like, no, it's okay.
I think initially that this was supposed to be a half hour show, and then I think they moved it out to an hour so they can have more of just the whatever analysis and all this talking and Twitter.
Oh yeah, because Twitter's
not
necessary.
Happy. That's for sure. And like I said, it's been going for basically 45 minutes. And now they're showing old draft lotteries. They're doing all the history. Like they gotta drag this out as long as possible before this game.
Then let's switch gears just momentarily, because I wrote a tweet earlier today where I said, you know, these guys would be fun in these places. That was basically my point. It wasn't like logic or anything. Like I mentioned Ayton, for example, in Phoenix, because I think he would fit well there. And one of the criteria I used in my head was it would have to be a player that going to a place where he would get minutes right off the bat. For example, Bagley to Memphis, because they don't really have a four. They have Jamichael Green, but like Bagley right there would jump in and start. And you would have, for my end at least, Wendell Carter in Sacramento, because the competition there is SIBO, and he's older than dirt. So
they have Harry Giles too, waiting in the wings.
Waiting there, yeah, with all his injuries. But I like their approach of him like taking a year off to get fully healthy. But is there a guy where you just go, oh, there's a guy that would just be so fun at this specific team?
Oh man, I would have to think about that. And I don't know, like, I got some guy walking up here. Trey Young seems like a super young player. I'm trying to think of where he would be super fun. Besides, I don't know.
I mean, in Orlando, he would get carte blanche. He would be able to shoot whenever he wanted.
I guess Trey Young in Orlando would be fun because they have a potentially fun front court with Gordon and Isaac. And if you have Trey Young as the point guard, and if they could, I mean, Fournier is a decent wing, and if they could find like another possible, if only they were going to bring back Mario, your guy Mario Hezonja, and they could have him on the wing and Trey Young at point guard, and then that young front court, that could be, I guess, kind of entertaining. Other guys.
Oh, but they had the Magic had the option to hang on to Hezonja, but didn't take it because it's the Magic.
Of course. Looks like we're getting this going here. Mark Tatum is at the podium. He is announcing. And number 14, we have the Denver Nuggets, as expected.
And next two picks should be the Clippers.
Yes, assuming the Pistons don't move up. And we have the Clippers at 13. That was their pick.
Yeah.
Jerry West. Little smirk on his face. And the Clippers, number 12. So, yep, they're good.
12, yep. That pick is conveying. Oh, that Blake Griffin.
And they just showed Luke Kennard, and he's like, well, just basically a whelp look on his face. That makes sense. Hornets.
I went to Chicago for this. Yeah.
Hornets staying at 11. So, no big jumps yet. 10 would be
Philly.
That's right. Oh, that's right. So this is a big one.
Yeah.
And it is the Sixers, so they are staying at 10. The
Sixers, yeah.
9 would be the Knicks.
Oh, the Knicks. Oh, this is going to be... I want to hear what's going on, because the Knicks, they have big hopes after hiring Fizdale.
Let's see. All right, now they're just showing Elton Brand and the Celtics literally sitting next to each other, and it looks like... we go to break.
Oh, we go to break.
So so we're going to break, and then 9 through 4 revealed, and then the top 3, of course. They got to fill out 15 more minutes of this, I guess.
Oh yeah, that's right. Of course. Unbelievable. Yep.
So I guess since we have this break, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the Sixers a bit, since they're staying at 10, they're getting this pick. We talked about Mikal Bridges a bit. I feel like that seems like a natural place for him. The Sixers, they could use another wing, and I mean, he would fit in nicely as a guy that could spot up and shoot. We saw Robert Covington have some... Robert Covington had a really nice year, really good defender. He was absolutely abysmal in the playoffs. I'm not really sure what happened there. I don't know if it was just him kind of falling back to earth, but I feel like they could really use another wing there, and that he would slot in really nicely. And as being a Villanova guy, that would make some sense there. Who else do you think would make some sense for the Sixers?
But I'm totally with you in regards to Bridges. I mean, look, they don't need more on-ball talent. They need guys who can spot up and defend. So, to me, I think it's honestly Mikal Bridges or trading potentially out of the draft for, you know, external improvements. Because who else really fits it? Like, you could theoretically, like you mentioned, go for swing for the fences. But you have so many guys in need of development. Like, how much more can your team sustain in terms of having young guys there? You have TLC, you have Korkmaz, you have Ben Simmons, Embiid to a certain extent. Like, you have a lot of young guys.
I think they're waiting, and they have some other draft and stash guys too. I think they're waiting on, Bolden, I think, is they're going to expect him to come over.
Yeah. And Matthias Lassaur and stuff like that. Yeah,
they have a whole treasure trove of guys. So yeah, I mean, Bridges just seems like a natural, like, come in, win now type player that would make sense. And obviously they're going to have a ton of cap space. We'll see if they're able to make a move for LeBron or Kawhi or Paul George or get one of those guys, which would be super terrifying.
Oh, I think they're getting Paul George. You do? I think Paul George is going to end up a Sixer. Yeah. Interesting. I think it just makes so much sense. And I think Paul is a very clever player, and I think he'll realize, oh, it makes sense.
It definitely does make sense. I know, I think, I've read some people say that them going after Paul George makes more sense than going after LeBron, just because of LeBron would be dominating the ball. Would that marginalize Ben Simmons too much? And that you could still have your Simmons playing basically full-time point guard, but then you have Paul George next to him on the wing to rain threes. Obviously, that didn't quite work out with the Thunder, but that wasn't really Paul George's fault until that last last game when he was absolutely terrible. But obviously, that seems like, I think Paul George as that kind of more off-ball and maybe not a total number one, like, dominate the ball offensive player, but as that off-ball threat would make some sense there for them. Mm. All right, we are coming back from commercial, so hopefully we're going to get this rolling here again.
And it's supposed to be the Knicks
number
up now.
Number nine would be the Knicks. Number eight is... who the heck is number eight?
Cleveland.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Nets pick Cleveland, and then the Kings and the Bulls. Five is the Magic, and then I believe four is the Hawks,
and then it's the Mavericks, and Memphis, and Phoenix rounded
out. All right, here we go. We're back. And the Knicks are staying at nine.
Oh, poor Knicks fans. Okay.
Scott Perry, not too thrilled. Nope. It's so ugly. They show them after the pitch game. They're just like so mad. Number eight. And it's the Cavs. So Nick Gilbert luck this year. So we're going chalk so far.
Yeah. Sacramento
is number seven.
Yeah.
And the Bulls have moved back. Oh, man.
Oh!
The Kings have moved up into the top three, and the Bulls have moved back to number seven.
Bulls have the seventh pick.
Yes, they are. So the Magic fall back to number six.
Yep.
And...
well, Sacramento moving up is interesting. Yeah.
The Mavericks at number five. So then that means it looks like we're waiting on the Hawks at four, right, I believe? The Grizzlies have moved back to number four. That is rough. So the Hawks have moved up. So right now our top three, we have the Suns, the Hawks, and the Kings.
Oh.
Interesting. So the Grizzlies moving back to four is brutal. Yeah, that is
brutal. And the Bulls now at seven. I mean, that now Mikal Bridges is more in play.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah, for sure. I would definitely think so. Like, I guess you also hope that Michael Porter Jr. falls to seven. That those back things. I think your guy Wendell Carter might be there as well.
Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah, I guess we have to... let's see how the rest of this plays out. We have now gone to commercial again. We'll wait for the top three. Yeah.
Then let's just do a quick recap. Yeah. So
we went...
Let's take him from 14. Let's just go all the way down so people tuning in or whatever. So we have Denver at 14, the Clippers at 13 and 12, Charlotte at 11, Philadelphia at 10, New York at 9, Cleveland at 8, the Bulls at 7, and Orlando at six.
Yes.
The Hawks at five.
Mavericks at five.
Hawks
moved up. Mavericks at five.
They did.
Grizzlies Mavericks go at from, five. Grizzlies went from two to four, I believe, right?
They went from two to four. Yes. Right. So the Grizzlies at four, which is, yeah.
So now we're looking at Suns, Kings, and Hawks in the top three. And obviously the Suns had the best odds at 25%. So they're in good shape for that. The Kings move from, was that, seven to three? So that's like the first time that they're getting some serious luck. Because I guess let's talk about the Kings for a bit. The Kings have been such a joke for a long time, and they've always drafted high. But I feel like I'm trying to think of the last time they drafted super high, because I feel like they've never really gotten. They've always been at like that five to like eight range. I feel like so now that they're going to move into the top three. Who do you think? I guess we're still waiting to see where they end up. But who do you think would out of your like top three guys? Who would you? I guess. Yeah, I mean, let's say they stay at three, they moved into three.
Jared Jackson.
You love Jackson. Yeah.
But either way, like this is so huge for Sacramento. This is franchise altering, honestly. Regardless of where they land in the top three.
Yeah, that is definitely big, and they, like I said, they've been so bad for so long, and it's about time. I guess it's about time the Kings got a good look going. going their way. And then besides the Kings, then we have, I said, the Suns we've talked about a bit. And then the Hawks. Hawks aren't interesting. They just lost Mike Budenholzer. Dennis Schroeder apparently wants out. Allegedly, there's all this weird stuff going on the interwebs about Dennis Schroeder being upset with the situation with the Hawks. Maybe this will make him reconsider. But I don't even like Dennis Schroeder that much. He seems just like average point guard. Wasn't very good defensively. Puts up numbers, but just efficiency wise, like I don't. And the rest of that team, talent wise, Torian Prince is all right. John Collins was a nice rookie last year.
They have a few pieces, but they need a major overhaul.
Something big. So this is definitely huge for them as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of unfortunate that Bud is leaving, because I feel like Doncic with Bud could have been super fun, but that's unfortunately that's going to be out the window now. But yeah, so I guess for the Hawks and the Kings to move over, that's obviously huge. And then it's good for the Suns that they're not getting screwed going from number one out to number four. So that's so that's big for them. Still waiting. Now they're still showing old crap. They still got five more minutes left until this game two starts. So they gotta drag this out. All right, here we go. We're back.
Yeah.
We got Josh Jackson, De'Aaron Fox, and then I believe it's Jamie Gertz, the actress. I did not realize she was married to the owner, Hawks owner Tony Ressler. I didn't realize that. All right, here we go. Tatum is announcing the top three. We got the Hawks at number three.
Oh. Wow.
And the Kings at number two. So the Suns, they stay at number one.
They stay in one, but the Kings at two. They're getting one of Doncic or Aiden. And here's the kicker. Tom Siller, he wrote a piece today about just lambasting the lottery. Like, he's jumping out of his chair right now, gleefully. So, yeah, Tom, delete that piece, please. that's amazing.
All right, yeah.
That's amazing.
So I guess let's go back to, let's, since we have this order in place now. So we have the Suns at number one. We kind of talked about if they did win number one. I believe we said that it will probably be Luka Doncic, probably, because they just hired the Slovenia national team's head coach from Europe. They won Eurobasket together this past year, so that would seem to make a lot of sense. So I guess, and you mentioned the crazy trade Booker, possibly assuming they don't trade Devin Booker, and then they keep him around.
I don't think they will.
How do you think? So how do you think that they work? Do they still needed a point guard? Right? Because they have Booker. Who else do they even have?
They had Elfrid Payton,
who is not good at all. Like, so you figure their backcourt is their. I guess if we look, I mean, they talk about it. They're going to do a bunch of moves this summer. We'll see. So if they have Doncic, Booker, I mean, we're still not totally sure what they have with Dragan Bender and Marquese Chriss. I do not like Marquese Chriss at all. I think a lot of people, more people are higher on Bender, but even him, he's still so young. And like as a stretch big man, he's shown some flashes. I'm not totally sure what to make of those guys. And they do have Josh Jackson, who's representing at the lottery.
And TJ Warren.
So I guess if you're looking at Doncic, Booker, and Jackson as three wings, and probably Booker and Doncic are basically your point guard, and Booker's your kind of a pseudo point guard.
You start Doncic at the three and move Josh Jackson to the four.
Okay,
and then, because I gotta admit, I don't like the idea of Doncic playing full time point guard. He's not that player. I mean, he's more of like a complimentary ball handler, and I think that's one of the major adjustments like NBA fan has to make, because when people talk about Doncic, he's the primary ball handler at Real Madrid, but that's not the best position for him. We saw that at Eurobasket. Like, he shared the court with Goran Dragic, and he benefited greatly from having a point guard next to him. So I think it would probably hinder his development a little bit, having to be the on-ball guy. So unless you share that responsibility with Booker and Josh Jackson, who could handle a little bit, at least in Kansas, I mean, I think they still need a point guard.
Yeah.
And then you just go super small.
Yeah, that would be really intriguing. I think that makes some sense. Is there any way do you think they would pass on Doncic to take Aiden? Anyway, what would odds put at that?
I don't know about the odds, but I do think there is a chance, because there are so many factors playing in here. Just because Igor got hired, I mean, it's still the GM's decision there. It's Ryan McDonough, and you know, it's his call, and if he deems that Doncic might not have the same potential as Aiden, which I mean, I can fall in line with that logic. I don't know if I necessarily agree with it, but I know where it's coming from. I understand where it's coming from. And if they fall in love with Aiden to that extent, and they feel like they might be similar in terms of where they're going, they could look at position and need. Like, I get the logic of having two guys that you value equally, and then you go for position.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And, like, I mean, because we talk about Aiden, and, I mean, like I said, their front court right now is, they got like a million front court guys that I don't think are, like, any good.
Not good.
Like, they still have Alex Len, but probably not for much longer as well. Like, not that.
No, he's unrestricted. Yeah, he's unrestricted.
Yeah, not that, like, any of these guys should really stop them from taking a guy like Aiden. That'll be an interesting decision to make. Like I said, I'm assuming a lot of people will just assume that Doncic is the guy just because of the coach, but he said Aiden is such a good prospect as well that I don't think we can really assume anything, and they're going to have to do their scouting, whatever McDonough decides. Maybe they will get crazy and make a trade somewhere. I think that would be kind of fun. So I guess if we look after the Suns, we have, what was it, the Kings at number two. So they'll get the leftover of most likely, assuming that it is Doncic, they'll get the leftover there, which will be huge. The Kings were an interesting team last year. They were very bad. De'Aaron Fox but they were really bad, but they won more games. The Bulls were kind of like this as well. Horrible, like, net rating. They didn't really do anything well, but they won a lot of close games, and ended up not screwing them. They ended up getting the number two pick anyways. So they have some really intriguing pieces. They're like, De'Aaron Fox is nice. Like, Buddy Hield was actually a pretty decent player, but they definitely still are waiting for that legit bona fide guy, and they should hopefully be able to get that guy here. So that will definitely be huge for the Kings, and hopefully it does kind of just drag them out of the morass they've been in for forever now.
You know what's funny? One of my comparisons for DeAndre Ayton was DeMarcus Cousins.
There you go. There's going to get Boogie all over again.
Well, without the attitude and less talent, I still think Boogie is more talented. Like, he's more multifaceted. Like, he can pass, he can shoot the three, and when he's, you know, locked in, he can actually be a plus defender. Although now we don't know anything because of the torn Achilles. But I mean, Aiden in Sacramento would at least finally put a period on the whole search for a center, because the Kings have drafted like a gazillion centers over the past, what, half decade. If it's Aiden, that search now is over. Like, no more centers for a while.
You would hope. You would think so.
You would hope. Yeah, but like, that's, I mean, obviously the Kings major winner of tonight's draft. I mean, you could argue Phoenix first overall because they won the first, but just to climb from 7 to 2.
That's a huge jump. I mean, huge jump. And
really.
And if you look at it, if you look at, I guess, losers here, I mean, the Grizzlies going from 2 to 4 is this absolutely brutal. The Grizzlies needed, I mean, and they'll still get a really good player number 4, but still to make that jump is really tough, because the Grizzlies were such a depressing team last year. Obviously, they had injuries to Mike Conley. It was brutal. The Chandler Parsons thing has just been a complete disaster. Gasol, they fired Fizdale. Who knows what Gasol's, he's getting old. I'm not sure how happy is there. Like, he is there.
Conley's getting older too.
Yeah, they're both in their 30s. I mean, at number 4, like, who do you think would make the most sense there? I mean, they could use a big man to, if they want to trade Gasol, they need Bagley. Help on the wing. You like Bagley there?
I think I do. I mean, he just makes sense. Like, there's a level of upside there. I'm not overly crazy about Bagley. I actually think Wendell Carter is better, but I don't expect everyone else to agree with me on that point. So I think Bagley is probably a semi-lock to go there. Like, he'll slide into the 4 immediately. So there's still, like you said, there's still something great to be had there. Tankathon just updated now with their results here. And yeah, they have Bagley at 4. So and they have Trae Young falling one step down to Orlando. So Trae Young and Orlando still tied to the hip.
I guess that makes sense. Let's see. Let's look at some other mock drafts. So I'm going to go with my boy Ricky O'Donnell, especially bloggable guy. He has we got Luka, DeAndre, Jaren Jackson Jr. top 3, which I think is kind of what we were thinking. Bagley at number 4 to the Grizzlies. There you go. Yep. Makes sense. We have Michael Porter Jr. to the Mavericks. Trae Young 6. At the Bulls, we have Mo Bamba going to the Bulls. So now that we are broadcasting on a Bloggable, let's talk about the Bulls. Yep. I guess you could call them kind of a loser here. It's kind of hilarious here. So they were tied with the Kings. They won the tiebreaker to move into six, but then the Kings ended up jumping in the two. Yes. So if the Bulls would have lost that tiebreaker, it would have been the Bulls jumping up to number three. So that's kind of an extra kick in the nuts for the Bulls. So now, I said, looking at Ricky's mock, he has them taking Mo Bamba. We have Bamba, Wendell Carter, Michael Bridges, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Colin Sexton. How would you feel about Bamba there? Would you want them to? I'm assuming you'd probably want them to take Wendell Carter at number seven.
I would like Carter, but yeah. I mean, I'm high on Carter, but that doesn't mean I wouldn't. I mean, understand different selections and appreciate the thought process behind it. Mo Bamba definitely makes a lot of sense for the Bulls. They do need a center, and with all respect, Robin Lopez.
Their defense definitely does need that anchor because like, Rolo's a solid player, but I mean he's not part of your like long term future. And I've talked about with people with Ricky as well, talking about having Lowry as the five, but I don't know if he's going to be really a full time five that you can really count on and build a really good defense, especially if you have. If Zach LaVine is going to be a big part of the future as well. Like, I feel like if Lowry's going to be your five, you need to stack the rest of your lineup with just, like, defensive studs, and I'm not really sure the Bulls can do that. So, yeah, I mean, Bamba would make sense as if you're going to have – if he's going to be your rim protector, rim runner, and then you have guys in Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine who can drive to the rim, attack the paint, and Bamba can be, like I said, that rim runner type player. Lowry stretches the floor. That would give more – Bamba room to operate down low, could get defensive rebounds. It would make some sense.
I wouldn't hate it for the Bulls at all.
I guess besides Bamba or Carter, I mean, do you think seven's still too high for Michael Bridges? Would you think about any of the other point guards and Sexton or Gilgeous-Alexander? What do you think about any other possibilities there?
I mean, Shai intrigues me. He really does. Shai intrigues me. But Colin Sexton, no, not at that point. But I will refer back to our good friend, Ricky O'Donnell, because he once said something that is very accurate. He said, if you have a guy, and that's your guy, then you don't need to consider whether taking a guy is too high or too low. And if the Bulls decide that Mikal Bridges is just their guy, then fine. That's him at number seven. I just don't, for me personally, when I look at that selection, if that's going to fall through, it's just you look back at the entire year and you go, like I said previously, did you just tank for Mikal Bridges?
Right. Yeah, that would be a tough pill to swallow. Not that, like I said, we talked about Mikal Bridges is going to be a really nice player, but probably not you're really hoping for.
He can't create. Like, let's just get that out of the way. Let's get his weaknesses out of the way. He can't really dribble. He's very much like Luol Deng in the sense that, you know, the two dribble max rule should be implemented for Mikal Bridges. Yeah. He's not a hardcore slasher who can create his own offense. He's a spot-up shooter with a great wingspan who can rebound the ball and defend multiple positions. Like, that's important, but he's in no way someone who can facilitate an offense.
Right, yeah, and that's, I think the Bulls definitely could have used somebody like that. The Bulls still need that number one guy. Because I love Lowry. I'm in on Lowry. I'm totally in on him. He's still probably not going to, I will not rule it out that he can be turned into like, whatever, Dirk or a legit number one option on like a great contender. I would still think he'll probably be better as a number two guy. So it definitely would have been nicer to get a more legit number one guy. Maybe the Bulls get lucky. Maybe a guy like Michael Porter falls, or maybe Trae Young falls, and he turns into a next great point guard. But this is right now. This doesn't feel great as a Bulls fan to go back to number seven after a painful year that featured a lot of ugly basketball and that featured a lot of wins that were a lot of it was because of Nikola Mirotic. It is good that Mirotic got them that extra first round pick, and I'll have to dive more into those later on. But I don't know about many of those other guys back at 22. I'll have to look more into that, but after this painful bowl season, it definitely is kind of a bummer that they're ending up at number seven here. Not that they can't, they got Lowry at number seven, and Lowry looks like a great prospect. Maybe they get another guy, like another really good player Like they got Lowry, but definitely not quite the ideal night for the Bulls tonight.
Should we guess the narrative? I think the narrative is going to be, hey, look at who we got at seventh last year.
Oh, that's definitely going to be it. I mean, it's an easy spin. Like, oh, like, well, we picked seventh last year, and we have Lowry as a foundational piece. Like, we expect to make another draft pick like Lowry and add another foundational piece to our core, which is, I mean, partially true, but
yeah,
still,
absolutely.
Like, I think even them internally, what they were and kind of what was being sold was a top three, top five, top three pick, and a legitimate, after you trade Jimmy Butler, basically a top 10 player in the NBA, that this year was going to get a guy that could be a top 10 player in the NBA someday. And right now, looking like that won't happen unless the Bulls get lucky. But again, name the game. Luck is a big name in the game when it comes to rebuilding. You never quite know how these guys are going to turn out. And so I guess we're just going to have to hope Bulls get super lucky.
Yeah. And also, I mean, it's just, it's not a 1 year rebuild.
Right.
I know that Garpax was out, and, you know, or John, actually, John was out saying we don't want to go through this again. But I mean, the Bulls are not going to be great next year either way. So they're going to be back in the lottery in a year from now anyway. So it's a process. It really is. What my hope is, if I'm a Bulls fan right now, is don't go into free agency thinking I can somehow rectify dropping a spot and go, oh, okay, I need to be competitive, so I'm going to sign a guy.
Absolutely.
No. Just stay the course. You can sign Hisonia, though, because he's young and there's some potential. Yeah, I'm not getting off that horse at all. And stick with the course. I mean, don't go out and find some 32-year-old.
Yeah. And
that just makes no sense.
And Pax did hint at that. It seemed like what they're hinting at is they want to be patient. Like you said, they don't want to be tanking again, where they're blatantly trying to lose, but that they want to improve internally, but they don't. But they're not going to do anything stupid where they go out and sign veterans just to sign veterans. I'm not too worried about that. They should have a good amount of cap space. I do hope that potentially, if they can take on another contract and get another draft pick out of it, I know they're hesitant to do that because they do have Omer's deal on the books for right now. But I mean, Omer's deal won't be that bad after this upcoming season. Like, I know it looks bad right now, but it can get out of it and not have too big of a penalty after this upcoming season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it would still make sense. Like you said, it's a process. It's still going to be a couple years. And if they can get another asset out of it using their cap space, I think that would make a lot of sense this year. I think the Bulls – and what I guess another one good thing is I do think the Bulls will be – I think they'll be – they're going to be bad, I think. But I think they'll be a little – I think they'll win a few more games. I'm thinking they get into the – around 30, maybe low 30s. Even though obviously Nico was a big part of them winning, I still do think there will be enough internal improvement. And I think Levine, Levine is a huge part of their offseason, and I know a lot of people have questions. I know you have questions about paying him a ton of money, but I still think he'll be, assuming he's back, he will be better than he was last year. I would hope. I mean, he was back in the ACL. He was not good. He was very bad. Both sides of the ball. He had some games where he looked. The Timberwolves game, he was great, but in general, he shot under 40%. He was an inefficient chucker. His defense was terrible. The Bulls got smoked with him on the court. He'll be a lot better. Hopefully Dunn improves a bit more. Hopefully Lowry takes a step forward. Bobby Portis took a nice step forward this past year. Hopefully they do get that internal improvement. And if they do take his next step forward. And I guess what another good thing is the lottery rules are changing, where I think – I can't remember what the exact odds are going to be.
It's four teams. Like, they're going to draw four teams at 14%. Odds,
yeah, and I think some of it gets spread out the rest of the way. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like,
I think so.
So I guess if the Bulls, even if they're bad, but they're a little better, like they could still turn out okay in terms of the draft odds. So yeah, you said they got to be patient. It's going to be a process. They're not going to most likely going to ramp up into playoff contention next year, maybe not even the year after that. Although 2019 could be a big year to maybe hopefully make a move for maybe a star or something. But yeah. So I guess we'll see. I guess tonight's a bummer, but Bulls just got to be patient. Don't do anything stupid, and hopefully things work out.
And with those wise words, I think it's time to sign off on the NBA podcast. We'll make this episode into a this is a live stream video, but we'll turn it into audio and publish it in the morning as well for the devoted listeners out there. And for you on Bloggable who's watched along, thank you for joining us. And Jason, thank you so much for coming on and providing insights and live commenting on the draft lottery. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. This was a ton of fun.
Let's do it again next year, then.
Yes, sir.
All right. Take care.
Take it easy.